Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Make no mistake, Trump-backed Bernie Moreno is a MAGA mistake for black families in Ohio.
We're not going to replace racism in this country from decades ago with a new form of racism, which is what DEI is.
If Bernie Moreno is elected senator, he will support the MAGA playbook and implement the thinly disguised Racist Project 2025 agenda. That means ending diversity, equity, and inclusion programs that exist to correct the impacts of racism. MAGA extremists like Moreno believe programs that have helped our families are entitlement programs, but they have no problem giving their buddies a boost by passing more tax giveaways for rich folks like themselves. Black Americans like me have worked hard and persevered in fighting for a fair shot. We've come too far to let self-serving extremists like Bernie Moreno take us back. That's why we must re-elect Senator Sherrod Brown. He has fought for equal opportunity for black families and will continue to do so. Go to OhioVoterGuide.org and register by October 7th. Paid for by WinSenate, which is responsible for the content of this ad. WinSenate.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
Spend my dollar.
It's not about what you want. It's about what you're willing to do to get it. Run it again.
Hello and welcome.
I'm not going to, so quit asking.
When you give me a hard time.
For the listeners that didn't get to go.
This is the payback.
Alabama wins!
What you did last year really doesn't matter.
Our goal is to have the kind of team that nobody wants to play.
All right.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. And fans, have we got a treat for you. Today we have Rich from the Buck Around Podcast joining us to talk about the matchup, the Alabama matchup with Wisconsin coming up this Saturday. It's a really good conversation. It's a lot of fun, and we certainly think you'll enjoy it. Give it a listen. Welcome back, Alabama fans, and have we got a treat for you. We have Rich from Buck Around Podcast, a Wisconsin Badger football podcast. Rich, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thanks. You even used the podcast directory search optimized name. I'm very impressed. So, I mean,
absolutely.
This show's on the ball.
Absolutely. Hey, let's jump into it, right? Talk about the pulse of the Badger Nation in regards to Luke Fickell as he's early into his second season.
I would say, well, 2023 was definitely, I think, a disappointment. The staff would say just as much themselves. I think there was a perception the roster that he inherited was a little more plug and play than it was, and then it turned out not to be. I think first year transition was a lot tougher than most people expected on both sides. Well, especially on the offense, there was a transition on the offensive side of the ball. By the end of the season, I think the transition on the defensive side of the ball was a little less severe. They sort of moved them back more towards what the defense looked like under Paul Christ and Jim Leonard. So it kind of stabilized. It was never great, but there was definitely a realization that maybe they didn't quite have the talent they thought they did on this team going into the season. And I would say right now, two games into 2024, the anxiety level is high on this team. They have had two, quite frankly, very underwhelming performances against two underwhelming opponents in a Western Michigan team that just got the doors blown off by Ohio State, and which the Badgers only beat by two touchdowns, and a South Dakota team that, I mean, I guess they're a quote unquote, you know, good FCS team, but they certainly were not superstars in any by any stretch of the imagination in that game, and we're playing a really tight and really conservative game plan that sort of sets a team like that up to get the doors blown off them when they're playing a team that's just has a better pool of talent than they did. But the Badgers, again, only won that one by a couple touchdowns. So, yeah, I think people are kind of down. And I think going into this game, they are not looking at this to be a super competitive one, to be quite honest.
Okay. That's interesting. I was looking at the schedule, and this is the most useless piece of information that I'll share with anyone today. But we have both played a Western and a South to start the season. So that's interesting. We played, we opened with Western Kentucky and played South Florida, and you guys played a Western and a South. Again, most useless piece of information that I'll share today, but I thought that was at least interesting. Talk about the special advisor role that Jack Del Rio is playing. There was an article and maybe a press conference that Fickell had early in the season. I couldn't find the lever of that on that conversation to see kind of what the scheme or plan was from that. What have you been able to discern about Del Rio's role?
I wouldn't read too much into it. I think it's a coach is looking to make a few bucks and comes in just to kind of maybe give them someone to bounce some ideas off. I forget where they've crossed paths in the past, and I forget the connective tissue to the staff, quite honestly. But I'll say this, just maybe coming from the perspective of the Alabama fan base, guys who come in like this to Wisconsin shouldn't be looked at the same way when they bring in, when they do the reclamation. I used to call them the Nick Saban reclamation projects, You come in as an off the field advisor for a year, you move onto the field, and then, you're coaching at Texas or whatever. I think these are much more limited, there's a lot less of a profile to it. It's more in the how the sausage is getting made. Yeah. I think there was a lot of talk that Mike Vrabel was possibly going to be doing something like that because Luke and Mike played together. And there's a lot of, again, more connective tissue there. But my suspicion, it's mostly around just from reading the tea leaves, it's a little bit more around program management and roster management and things like that than anything that's going to have an impact on a Saturday.
Okay. Let's talk about the Badger offense. Year two for Phil Longo and year one for Miami transfer Tyler Van Dyke. What are you seeing or expecting from this pairing?
So going into the season, I think the expectation with Tyler Van Dyke was he was going to be sort of a high risk, high reward quarterback. The term I used on our podcast was he's the prototypical 25 and 10 quarterback, where you were going to get, a couple dozen touchdowns. You were going to get 10 picks, six of which you were going to bang your head against the wall because they were just, kind of forced balls into coverage. But the guy, I get why he is talked about just in the 2 weeks that we've seen. He has an NFL arm. He has that arm, can throw from the opposite hash. There's against Western Michigan, he threw it wasn't a big ball, but it was a 10 yard out. That was a dart across the hash, across the field that, Wisconsin is not exactly the cradle of quarterbacks. And for the way you'd look at Van Dyke's arm talent versus guys they've had in the past, there's a different, animal to it. And, every coach, I think really truly every quarterback coach and offensive coordinator is sort of like, she's sort of like the lady with the boyfriend who's a little bit dysfunctional, and she believes I can fix him. Right. And I think offensive coordinators, when they see quarterbacks with arms like that, say, I can fix him. And I think the value prop on Van Dyke was, again, they'll figure a way to minimize mistakes and maybe get that big arm a little bit. Thus far, you really haven't seen that. Against Western Michigan, they really didn't press the ball down the field. And the few times they did, Van Dyke almost threw a pick. He had three balls that I think were very much should have been picked off. If it was Alabama, I'm pretty sure those balls would have ended up in the defense's hands. They didn't. They just kind of pinball around off defenders and hit the ground. Against South Dakota, they did start strong. There was a 50-yard touchdown, but that was just a little RPO pitch thing and the defense bit. I mean, I don't read into that one very much, but he did have a couple throws downfield. But after the first quarter on Saturday, they had one completion of more than 10 yards the rest of the game and two attempts downfield. One of them ended up going 21 yards. The other one was just into coverage and kind of broken up. So I think thus far, the trick with Van Dyke has been he hasn't really given them, you know, you've seen some of what the downside is. It hasn't bitten them yet, but you haven't really seen him prove he's got the upside to, you know, sort of offset that yet. I think in general, the offense is still a bit of a work in progress. People were open to the idea of moving away from the traditional Wisconsin football that people sort of think of when they think about that program, when Longo came in, when they brought in, Fickell brought in Longo. But thus far, it hasn't really fired on all cylinders. The wide receivers aren't quite what they need. I mean, there's just a lot of situations where they're not getting open. And teams are finding you can, you know, rush three or rush four. And if you drop seven or eight, it leaves that offense in a spot where guys aren't getting open. I mean, it's kind of simple as that.
I want to follow up on the Van Dyke. You talk about his arm strength. Where would you rate his accuracy?
So that's a tricky way to put it. It's a tricky way to ask it. Is he overthrowing? Like what you see, like when you saw him in Miami in the past, I felt like you didn't necessarily see accuracy issues. Like I watched all of his snaps when they brought him in the portal. I sat down and watched every passing snap he had last year. And I feel like you see a lot of the same thing where it's not so much an accuracy issue. It feels more like it's a read and it's an understanding of what the defense is doing. And he tends to get fooled into bad throws. So what I've seen of him thus far has been, you know, especially against that Western Michigan team, it was trying to force a ball specifically in the red zone and more so like inside about the 10, 12 yard line where he was really trying to make something happen that maybe wasn't there more than, you know, he's trying to hit, you know, this spot and the ball's 5 yards to the right of it. That's not really going on.
No, I got you. The reason that sort of jumped out is a question. Last week, the Alabama secondary really struggled with coverage on South Florida. Just their quarterback could not hit an open receiver. And so he was leaving the ball. He was missing those passes by, you know, 5 yards. And had they hit just a couple of them, you know, the outcome of the game potentially could have changed. And certainly the score differential. They had scoring opportunities they left on the field. So curious what that matchup may start to look like. Certainly going to be a more talented quarterback than we've faced certainly in the passing game. So that'll be an interesting thing to watch. You mentioned the wide receivers. Looks like Will Pauling and Bryson Green are the leading receivers this early in the season. Who else? Is there anyone else? What's maybe their play style, speed, jitterbug, tall guy versus other receivers maybe Alabama fans should be on the lookout for?
Yeah, so when you're looking at Wisconsin's receiver, I mean, Will Pauling led the team in receptions last year. I think he had 75. Don't hold me to numbers, but it's in the mid-70s. Was by far the leading receiver, is much more of the sort of third down slot receiver. You know, he's not a big play guy. He tends to be the guy that's going to settle in under the zone and then try to get the ball over the sticks that way. Bryson Green is much more of your traditional X. I think on this team, it's either, to me, if you're looking at skill position players, it's either Green or running back Cade Yakimeli, who looks the most improved over last year. I mean, Green is a bigger body guy. He was hurt on and off a lot last year, but now he and Pauling sort of look like they are the class of the position. The third guy I think I'd mention at the receiver spot that you're more likely to see on Saturday is Tretch Kekahuna. They kept his red shirt, but he is a second year player, either redshirt freshman or a sophomore. I can't remember off the top of my head, but he is a small guy. I mean, they list him at 5'10", but they also list Will Pauling at 5'10", and you see them in media availabilities next to each other. And I know this is an audio format, so this doesn't work great, but one of my hands is about 4 inches lower than the other. So I think he's maybe like 5'8", 5'9", but he's really quick. He's a real shifty receiver. He's going to be a guy, they're going to tend to try to drag him. You know, he's going to be a guy that's not going to body up on the sideline, but they're going to try to get open and coming across and some kind of mesh concept. But that would be the receiver I would be looking at. Maybe Vinny Anthony, who's kind of a tweener body. He's about 6 feet, but they tend to play him outside. And he's a guy that rotates with another receiver, CJ Williams. But the big three that I think you're looking at are the first three I mentioned, which is Green, Pauling, and then Kekahuna, because those are the ones they're going to try to integrate some way in this passing game. They have said, and I think I buy it for the most part, but they have said they have pretty much been real tight with what they've called on offense so far, so they haven't put much on film. So I think the plan will likely be to get a guy like Pauling and a guy like Kekahuna into some mismatches. Yeah. Bryson Green's role is always the same. It's, you know, big body X guy who's a fade route and you're going to use on the sidelines. But the other two are the ones that they're going to try to get more creative.
All right. I want to talk about your running back position. And, you know, it's a little game I like to play. How do you reveal that you're from the South without saying that you're from the South? And when I look at your running back room, I see a Ches Malusi and a Cade Yakimeli, and those have to be the coolest names I've ever heard. I hope they get a lot of carries just so I can hear the announcers say those names. They just roll off the tongue. I just love them. Talk about the Badger running game.
So right now, it's sort of the primary guys are going to be Ches Malusi, and if he's healthy again, Tui Walker. He's a guy that transferred from Oklahoma last year. Cade Yakimeli is going to be sprinkled in as the third guy. He's a little bit different. Ches is sort of your traditional, I would say, cut and go back. He's been around. He was the guy who transferred from Clemson about 100 years ago, it feels like now. I think it's three seasons ago. Had a ton of injuries in his career. Has never quite had a full season to put it together, but came back for a sixth year this year to sort of try to put something on tape so he gets a shot in the league. Has not had a great start to the season statistically. I think he's under 4 yards a carry right now. I think some of that, quite honestly, has been Tyler Van Dyke hasn't been great on the zone reads at times and has put the ball in his hand when there's just nowhere for them to go. And he's had three runs, I think, of that have been 5 yard losses where it's just he runs right into a wall. He's not a superstar back, but he is a guy that can cut and can accelerate. Can catch the ball as well, reasonably well, and transition into moving forward in a way that they really want to have in this passing game. Because they do want, I mean, Longo's goal is to have swing passes to the running backs effectively be an extension of their run game. Mm-hmm. And just to get guys out there a little bit and out from behind the line. Tui Walker is a little bit different. He's a shorter guy. He's under 6 feet tall, but he's a big dude. I mean, he's a power back built kind of like a bowling ball, but does have some explosion and burst. If he's healthy, he's going to split carries pretty evenly with Malusi. Yakimeli is kind of the wild card because he has come on this year. I mean, he is averaging something silly like 8 yards a carry, but he had a 29 or 25 yard carry against South Dakota, that sort of throws the balance off a little bit in terms of that average. But he's one of those guys who's just an athletic, fast, straight line guy. And if there is a seam, that's where he can really excel. I don't think of him as a natural running back, which isn't a bad thing per se, but I would never look at him as being somebody they're going to use every down. Like he's going to get sprinkled in. He's going to be, you know, it's going to be 30, 30, 20. And then 10% is Jackson Aker at this point, who is, they don't have fullbacks on the roster, but he's basically a fullback. He's a big dude who is primarily, they'll go two back sets and he's a lead blocker, you know, out of a shotgun with split running backs. It looks like something out of the late 80s. And can catch a ball out of the backfield.
Okay.
And might get a ball just to, I mean, he's their primary pass pro guy, but also might get a carry or two just to keep a defense honest. But that's more or less what you're going to look at out of that backfield.
Yeah, that makes sense. Wisconsin has something of a reputation for developing offensive linemen. I look through sort of the two deep and it's littered with redshirts and upperclassmen. What should Alabama fans expect from this Badger offensive line?
The line is, I would say, solid, but unspectacular. You definitely have two Sunday guys this winter at the tackle spots and Jack Nelson, and I'm assuming Riley Malman's leaving. I think their tackles are good. I think their center is reasonable in Jake Renfro. The guards are all right. Joe Brunner is the new one this year. I mean, the rest of them are all returning. I would say, though, at this point, they aren't exactly guys that are turning into wrecking balls at the second level yet. Like, they're really not reaching yet. They're sort of still in that double team and not quite coming off to this point. I think that's partially a function of the running backs being a little quick to the hole, but I also don't think you necessarily have superstars. Like, okay, you don't have, I mean, when I talk about Malman and Nelson as Sunday guys, they're probably day two, late day two guys. You're not looking at first round picks at this point, in terms of the talent and, you know, the level of what you're seeing, but it's not a bad line. Like, it's solid, but it's not like it has been in the past where you clearly are, this offense is running from the offensive line out. It's not that situation, but they can play.
I got you.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Let's jump around to the other side of the ball. Talk about defensive coordinator Mike Tressel. What kind of scheme is he running there in Madison?
So Mike Tressel was brought in with the idea that they were going to kind of run a 3-3-5, was his sort of dream, I think, to eventually end up. And then a dollar package, which was sort of like one of those linebackers turns into one of these hybrid safety guys. Mm-hmm. They have recruited to that to this point, but they haven't really put it in yet. They tried to run it last year and it was real rough for them. They started the year this year after sort of sliding back into a base nickel with a two down line look and four linebackers, which is what they used to run in the past. They moved back into that towards as the season progressed last year, started the year there, but have found thus far, and really kind of to no one's surprise, and everyone knew it going in, just the way they were hunting in the transfer market, that they have issues on the defensive line. They don't quite have the horses there. So they have put it more into, I mean, last week you saw, I think somebody did the math. I didn't. I think 45% of the defensive snaps were in a traditional 3-4 look, mostly because when they're sitting in that nickel, they're losing in the box. But I will say the defense is the big thing he's doing that's changing is they are getting leaner. The outside linebackers are still, you know, they're still looking to have guys in the 250-pound range there, but their inside linebackers are getting smaller, more like 230, a little more ability to go laterally, which is what they're going to need in that defense. But it's been a mixed bag. I mean, really, Wisconsin for the last decade, the reason they've had success has been their defense. There have been seasons where they have been, I mean, a real legitimate top 10 defense in the country, not just statistically, but one that I would say was as good as any you could see in the country. It would, if the Badgers came up short in the last decade, it wasn't generally on the defensive side. It was on the offensive side of the ball.
No, that's interesting. I'm glad you went there. I had some notes in that regard. Multiple of sort of the online depth charts I looked at, they did specifically call out a 2-4-5 alignment, and I was curious. Alabama has played that, not so much this year with the new sort of defensive coordinator and approach, but the last couple of years Alabama had played a 2-4-5, and we take those two outside linebackers and walk them up, and so if you're just watching the film, it looks like a 4-2, but it's really a 2-4 because of the personnel. And then when we would go and it would play a nickel on the back, and when we would go to a dime, we'd sometimes take a defensive lineman off. And in a 3rd and 6, teams would run against us and have success because we've just got one down lineman. And so I was going to ask, and I think you sort of covered it, but I was going to ask how that was stacking up, you know, maybe against the run. What are the thoughts just across maybe the Wisconsin fan base around co-defensive coordinator Colin Hitchler leaving Wisconsin? He's now on the Alabama staff. Any sort of thoughts or notes you have on that?
He wasn't there long. He was there a season. But I would say fans were disappointed that he left. He really helped them recruiting in Pennsylvania. They got a guy, Kevin Haywood, who is a true freshman who has played 2 games already at right tackle, who will be a star. I mean, that's why they're playing him. He's going to start next year. But he brought in several bodies for them. Really good recruiter. Who knows about, I don't really know enough to say anything on field in terms of, there's just too many variables between a new scheme. And the best player on their defense is Hunter Wohler, the safety. And so was Hunter Wohler good when he came in? Yes. Did he get better? Sure. How much did he have to do with it? I can't tell you. I also, as a just a general rule, I have the what I call the 80% rule when it comes to assistants. I think 80% of assistants are largely interchangeable.
Yeah.
And there are 10% on the bottom and there are 10% on the top who are different. And we have seen, I think, both. In the 10 years that I've watched the Badgers. But for the most part, those guys kind of come and they kind of go. Maybe he's in that 80%. I'm not sure. I think he's probably to the high side of that 80%, especially on the recruiting side. But how much that matters at Alabama is a different story than Wisconsin. But I would say, yeah, I mean, overall, I think he's a good piece to any staff. I would say, just back to your point about the defense, what you described is pretty much what your listeners are going to see. The Badgers, when they line up in that 2-4-5, it's 2 down linemen. It's the rush linebackers sort of in like a 6-tech.
Yeah.
Just shading on that, maybe to the outside shoulder of that tackle, trying to, you know, one of them's trying to take on a tight end or a running back. What has struggled with it is 2 parts. Defense is just any kind of stretch play outside, whether it's a zone or just, you know, just a straight get the ball out. The Badgers don't have the bodies in the box. And some of it, you kind of say the inside linebackers aren't great. But I think a big part is the defensive linemen are not drawing double teams. South Dakota, I mean, there was a couple plays in that game. The center doesn't even bother trying to help the guards. He goes straight second level on the linebacker, doesn't even pause. And if that's happening against South Dakota, that's a bad sign. And South Dakota, you know, had some situations where they are just you're stretching the play, and then they are just finding a seam because those linebackers are getting washed, you know, between the hashes before the ball's even getting outside, and it leaves room. And I think any team, I mean, I really do. I think that's the way Alabama attacks. I mean, if you run that until the Badgers prove they can stop it, because they haven't been able to stop it. I mean, this last game they played, South Dakota had 113 yards through the air, and I think it's 20, I forget how long it was, 25, 26 yards of that was a pop pass. That was just, I mean, it's a handoff.
Yeah.
So they had 80 yards on 22 attempts. So even with that, with their offense being so one-dimensional, Badgers couldn't stop it. They went to the 3-4. I mean, it really is like an old school looking 3-4 with the line, you know, you move the outside linebackers out a little bit, but you got the three of them right there. And it was better, but it's more the horses on the line aren't really there. The best guy they've got, I'd say at this point, is a guy, Elijah Hills, who was a transfer from FCS from Albany out in my direction. And he is kind of a bit of a one-trick pony, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but he is a guy who's going to bull rush. If he can get under the pads, he can make something happen. But he has real problems. Like, as soon as they hit him with some double teams, he started ending up down on the turf.
Okay.
I think that's really where he's going to get tested, is if he can elevate a little bit, because the rest of the guys, I mean, it's three guys you're going to see up front between him. It's probably going to be Kurt Neal and Ben Barton. Last week, they all played 30 snaps or more. And then there's three more guys who all played single digits. So there is a bit of a rotation, but it's not a, they really wanted to play five or six guys this year, and they don't really have the horses to go super deep there where they're playing guys other than situational. They're playing a true freshman in Dylan Johnson. There's a Dylan Jones and a Dylan Johnson on this team. And it's, I never keep track of it. Whichever one it is that plays defensive line, I think that's Dylan Johnson, but they're sprinkling him in a little bit because, again, it's going to be a guy who has to play next year.
Yeah.
So you might see a little bit of him out there who has the body type, and you can tell eventually he'll be there, but he needs 20, 25 pounds. But that's where I think the game's going to come down to, is the Badgers need to find a way to compete there. And right now I don't know how they do it.
You know, sometimes you got to take a youngster, or maybe a player that's not quite ready, and you got to sneak them in sometimes just to get some rest. You almost have to manufacture depth, and, you know, hopefully we're going to put them in for a series and the opponent doesn't have a big play as a result. And so you try to, we got to give a guy a blow here. And so let's see if we can't sneak a snap or two as we go. Who should Alabama fans be watching at the linebacker position? Who's sort of the key name or names there?
Well, so the captain on defense, Jake Chaney's out for the first half for a targeting situation that happened in the third quarter, I think it was. So he's out for the first half. The guy
we have one of those. We have one of those too. have one of those at targeting late in the game. Gonna miss the first half.
And you're going to see in his stead, probably guy Tackett Curtis is going to be the guy you see the most. He's a guy the Badgers went after really hard when he came out of high school as an outside line. Actually, this kind of tells the story of how the defense has changed a little bit. They wanted him as an outside linebacker, and it was Wisconsin, LSU, and USC at the end. He went to USC, spent a year at USC, transferred out. He came back to Wisconsin, and now he's an inside linebacker.
Okay.
He is very athletic. He's pretty fast. He was hurt in the spring and for a decent amount of fall camp, so hasn't really been in the rotation much, just because I think they were waiting for him to get up to speed on the defense. Played in the second half and definitely, honestly, filled better than Chaney did. He's more athletic, but he's a little more aggressive, but I think he can also be a guy that can be baited into an over pursuit and open up a cutback. But I think he's going to be an interesting guy to watch. He's number four. I think he's going to be a good player down the road. I mean, I think he's maybe, it's a little early. Maybe he's not quite ripe yet, but he's going to be fun to watch. The other one that will play a lot is a guy, Jaheim Thomas, who might be familiar. I forget, Alabama play Arkansas last year? Because if they did, they saw him. He was their leading tackler last year. He's a guy that transferred from Cincinnati to Arkansas, and then now just transferred from Arkansas to go back with Fickell and company. So he knew these guys. So far, and again, it's really hard to say what is him and what has been linebackers trying to sort of clean up the wash of defensive linemen. Play has been a little underwhelming. They brought him in and have talked about him as a guy that not only would be an inside linebacker, but in passing downs. And especially on passing downs you were talking about before, which is where they're going one down lineman, two outside, and then maybe a safety, and then another linebacker on the end in what they call their dollar package. He has been that edge rusher, has not really shown thus far that he is perhaps the player that fans thought he might be. But those are the big ones. They brought in two transfers at the outside linebacker and Leon Lowry and John Pius to pair with Darryl Peterson, who's a guy who's returned. They haven't really shown up yet. And most of the talk about them was being people to bring in and be factors in the pass game because they really didn't have any kind of rush last year. And this year, it hasn't really improved to date. I think pretty most of the pressures they've gotten so far have been from the line,
right?
Not from the outside linebackers. And that's going to be the real question, is if they can show, because they're going to need to show in the pass game.
Another, just as you're explaining, Jaheim Thomas, just another useless piece of information we'll pass along. He is the second player this season that we will have played 3 years in a row for three different teams, or that we will have faced, that Alabama will have faced, having three different teams. Jaheim Thomas, I assume he was on that Cincinnati team.
Yep.
We faced in the playoffs Arkansas last year, and then you guys Saturday. And early in the season, we opened against Western Kentucky quarterback T.J. Finley, who we also faced when he was at LSU and Auburn. So it's the useless information that I remember. So, but there you have it. You mentioned Hunter Whaler, leading tackler at the safety position. Certainly someone to watch for there. Who's the corner we need to be on the alert watching out for?
Best corner. So I'm going to be kind of curious how this works. So Hunter Whaler is the best player on that defense. He's a guy who has, he has the athletic tools to play on anybody's defense. He really does. The interesting situation is going to be what happens at corner. So Ricardo Hallman, is a returning, he's a junior, but this will be his last year. I think he led the nation last year with 7 picks, if I'm not mistaken. But he did have 7, and so far this year has been real quiet. I mean, people just haven't even thrown the ball in his direction. He is paired with this guy, Nizir Forkreen, who quite frankly was one of the surprises on defense last year. He was brought in from Division II Grand Valley State as a grad transfer. His head coach at the time is the guy that's now Wisconsin's outside linebacker coach, Matt Mitchell. So the relationship was there. Matt had obviously seen him play and kind of talked him into coming along. Had a decent season last year, kind of broke down as the year went on. They came out and said he had some injury issues and also was a little bit undersized, but has put on weight and very much looks the part of a power four corner. So, this is the strength of the defense in my mind, is the secondary, because you have those two. They have a really nice freshman in Xavier Lucas, who came in the spring and basically has pushed himself into a starting role. He got dinged up last week, falling into the tunnel. I think it was a hamstring thing, but he ended up falling to the ground in the tunnel on the concrete. It looked terrible, but didn't play the rest of the game. But he doesn't look like a freshman. The body is built. And Wisconsin, especially a corner, has to find guys that they sort of develop, but Fickell, this is kind of his strength, is getting the corners, and he got one. And this guy, if he's healthy, I'll be curious to see how he does. But the big one to watch is going to be Ricardo Hallman. The Badgers tend to, he is a field corner, but what they will do a lot of times is if there's kind of any kind of pre-snap motion, Hunter Whaler will rotate down into a coverage role, and then Hallman almost becomes a safety. And that's where that's where he can make plays. And it's really, if they can get him into that sort of like cover one spot, that's where he can do some things. But he's not the biggest corner. He really isn't. He's probably, I think they claim he's 5'11", and I think he's 10.
Take a couple off.
He's not crazy athletic. He's an athletic guy. He's a power four player, but he is really, really smart, really, really instinctual, and really, really technical.
Okay.
And it's going to be interesting to see him play against top tier receivers, guys that really have the raw materials of this is next level player at wide receiver, because he has done it in the past. And he showed up against Ohio State. He has shown up against top tier competition, and it's always just interesting to see him have another shot at that, because I do think he's a guy who will be impactful in a game if he's given an opportunity and doesn't get baited.
I'm reading depth charts and I see the nickel is Max. Is it Lofi?
Lofi.
Looked like a converted cornerback. And so looks like sometimes playing with three corners on the field. Do you feel that helps? Does that help more in the passing game or hurt more in the running game with maybe a smaller body type in the position?
So what happens generally is a guy when they're in that base nickel, you're going to see either Preston Zachman, who is, I guess you'd call him they really don't have a free and a strong safety in any traditional sense, but either Woller or Zachman tends to play down near the line. And then that nickelback is mostly in coverage. So he is the guy that's 8 yards off the field off the line of scrimmage. And one of those safeties is, basically behind a linebacker, down in that area. Also with Lofi, you will see him split time. I don't know how much you're going to see this week with Austin Brown, who is a much bigger bodied. He looks more like your old school strong safety in terms of the frame. He's north of 200 pounds, broad shouldered, bigger bodied guy who's a little bit more of the thumper that he will play when it's more likely to be. If they think Alabama is going to lean into a run situation, his snap counts. He was at, I think this last week, 15 snaps, and Lofi played fewer because this guy, Xavier Lucas, really, he's played 24 until he got hurt.
Okay.
So he was on pace to basically be a starter it's been an interesting season so far on the defensive side. Just because Xavier Lucas was a guy who played 5 snaps in the first game, right at the end, just to sort of cut his teeth. He got an interception on a desperation play. It was a real acrobatic catch, but garbage time, quarterback forcing the ball, whatever that is. And then clearly in 1 week they said, okay, this guy's ready. And they threw him out there and he's kind of leapfrogged a little bit, Lofi, and has leapfrogged this guy, RJ Delancey, who was a grad transfer they brought in, who at the end of spring, you were in your mind, writing in as the nickel.
Okay.
So it'll be interesting to see how the personnel usage is there. I think they're very nervous with this team, with some of the young players. I think putting them in this game and getting them real exposed, I think not just for this game in particular, but I think in the bigger picture of how they're sort of retooling the team.
Right.
So I'm not sure in this game week specifically how personnel usage may be a little bit different.
Okay. So all talk and conjecture and projections and sort of build up and drama aside, it's a late game and it's a tight game late in the fourth quarter. What's gone well for the Badgers?
If it's a tight game late in the fourth quarter, they have probably found a couple chunk plays on offense. They've probably had something schemed up, honestly, since the fall that they've kept off film. Tyler Van Dyke has done a better job of working through his progressions and especially on the zone read option stuff, been cognizant of receivers out there that have been left uncovered because they have left points on the field thus far. So I think that's the big part, is a little bit of growth from him, maybe a little something Phil Longo's had in his back pocket. And defensively, the Badgers have forced some kind of turnover, and gotten some points off turnovers. I think that's going to be really how this thing happens, because I just look at this Badger team and the way they've scored so far this year, I'd have to go back and look, but I think off the top of my head, seven drives of 13 plays or more so far this year, because maybe it's six, but they have had long dink and dunk drives where they have not been able to stretch the field that I don't think you're going to do when you actually elevate the talent level to real power four teams. So they're going to have to execute differently than they have thus far in office, because I don't think they're going to score a lot of points if they don't. And the defense on the defensive line is going to have, I just think the defense is going to have a hard time standing up in the run game in any kind of sustained way. So they're going to need to find ways to cause turnovers.
I got you. Rich, I'll get you out of here on an easy one. Alabama fans making the trip to Madison, what can they expect? What are some of the must visit places, restaurants, bars, whatever it is in the Madison area? It's a beautiful town. It's been years since I've been there. But what should Alabama fans expect, and what makes a trip to Madison whole?
So I would suggest, I don't know what the weather is supposed to be there this weekend. I think it's supposed to be decent. My advice, and some of this is going to be cliche, but I am going to put it out there anyways. I would say the one thing you really have to do if you get in there, Friday or even after the game on Saturday, go to the Union. The Memorial Union is right on Lake Mendota. The campus, people who don't know, Madison is basically shaped like a barbell, in that there's an isthmus between two lakes. The campus is the handle in the barbell. So it's right between the lakes. It is dead in downtown. I mean, the stadium is, it's a mile from the Capitol building. You know, I mean, it's not far. Mm-hmm. You are right in dead downtown Madison. Great. I mean, like, absolutely one of the best cities you'll ever visit. And you want to hit the Union because you can have a beer on the lake, right there looking over the water. You can even get a Varsity Golden Ale. You'll be supporting the NIL efforts of Wisconsin football if you buy one of those, because it's some kind of NIL tie. And if you're looking for something before the game, the big thing that's different, I think, than a lot of other schools is Madison isn't a big tailgate culture. It is much more a bar culture, because you are in a city. So there's not like big field. I mean, there are tailgates, people set up in the parking garages and things like that. But Regent Street is loaded with bars that are opening at 7 o'clock in the morning. Nice. State Street, which is just, it's a main pedestrian throughway that goes from campus to the Capitol, is, again, everybody's open at 7 a.m. You find one, go in and have fun. Like, it's a terrible place to be when you're 18 to 22 and trying to focus on your homework and your studies. As I like to say, my major was fake IDs and weekends when I was there. But it's really a one of a kind campus in that respect. I mean, it's one of the greats. And, they put out those annoying lists every year that, all those content forums online do about best campuses and blah, 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 blah. But it really lives up to the billing. It's, I think, closer to you guys. I think the closest I could compare it to would be like Austin, where UT is, if anybody's been there. It's kind of that vibe, but I haven't been there in a while. And I think that's a little bit more campusy than Madison is much more of an urban campus. There's green space and all that, but it is in the city.
Yeah.
And it just gives it a unique vibe that way. And it's really, if people are going, it's really worth a trip. They'll have a good time. People are friendly. I think especially in this one, quite honestly, because I don't think people are expecting much in this one. I mean, I know the line is two touchdowns right now, more or less. And I would still be taking Bama in this one, quite frankly.
I think it's a trip you have to make. And I say that full realization that I'm not going. Madison is a beautiful city. The town square, the bars and restaurants all the way down State Street, like I say, to the stadium, is phenomenal. Drink your way from the Capitol to the stadium and enjoy a game. And then it's two, programs that don't play a whole lot, and to get to play in Camp Randall, I think is certainly a special event. And I think, you mentioned people in Madison are very friendly. I'd share that experience. And on a game like this, everyone's going to root for their team. But Alabama fans are going to be very, very pleased with being in a location such as Madison. And I suspect that Wisconsin fans are going to be happy to host an Alabama. And so I think it's going to be a very collegial, no pun intended, a very collegial experience in that way. I think fans going to the game are just going to have a hell of a time. And darn it, I wish I was there. I wish I was going to go for it.
It will be fun. And getting it in September is great.
Yes.
Because it's a really nice time in Madison. And as you said, I think the biggest thing is it's just really nice that this is a home and home and not one of those lame neutral site NFL stadium games that just are kind of soulless television spectacles. So it's nice that they got this together, because the 2015 game, it was cool that they got to play, but you're like, okay, it doesn't have the feel. This feels like an exhibition on some level.
Yeah.
I'm glad that this time around they managed to get it in stadiums. And it's not like, I mean, the Badgers played LSU in Green Bay, which is kind of similar, but it's not, because it's not Camp Randall. But at least it was theoretically more of a home game. So I like that these are home and homes.
Yes.
So this will be a good first leg of it. Absolutely. And hopefully, I mean, if it goes the way I think, I don't think it's going to be super competitive. But at least hopefully it might lay the seeds for the return, which is, what is it, 27? I can't remember what year it is.
Yeah.
But hopefully by the time they get to that one, this thing's a little more fun. Because the Badgers are still trying to get their feet back under them in terms of what they have been in the past, in terms of the consistency. And I just don't think they're quite there yet. But hopefully they can... They got up for the Ohio State game last year and played really well in that game. It got away in the end, but I didn't think they had any business being in that game, and they managed to be in that game for three quarters. So I'd like to see, I'll be interested to see, maybe the Badgers can surprise in that way, because Fickell does have a way to get these guys up for what they perceive as big games. So
no, I think he's a good coach. And I think the Badgers are going to come ready to play. And it sounds like maybe they're holding some stuff close to the vest. And so that'll add some intrigue to the game as well. Thanks for coming on with us today. Where can our fans find you and hear more about your pre and post game discussions?
Yeah, so I mean, if you want to listen to Buck Around, just any podcatcher you use, just search for the Buck Around, you'll find us. Or even easier, just go. We keep a link tree at buckaroundpodcast.com that has the feeds and our Patreon and our YouTube and all that stuff is there. It's an easy way to find us. But yeah, no, my pitch always when I come on these shows is one of the things that my co-host Max and I are most proud of is a good portion of our audience are non-Wisconsin fans, something like in the 10 to 15% range. Wow. The last time we sort of took a look at things and sort of did one of those informal surveys of fans. And I think that's because we are definitely... Well, I mean, I'm 47. Max is 51. We are old enough to kind of be a little bit more emotionally detached from this, in that it doesn't ruin our week if they win or lose, and it doesn't make our week if they win, I should say. But we take a critical eye to the team and mostly are kind of just curious about trying to figure out how this whole thing that is football works, and have this sort of never-ending quest to have perfect knowledge of football, knowing we're never going to have it.
Right.
But it makes it fun for us, because we're always just trying to learn a little bit, and
I like it.
We have a fun community with the audience that is around. So yeah, if you're ever interested in learning more about Wisconsin and you're looking to add something to your feed, go give us a look. You might enjoy it. We have a good time.
There you go. Alabama fans. When you're listening with our, when you're finished with our show, you got to go check out the Buck Around. Rich, thanks for joining, and good luck Saturday.
Yeah, thanks, David.
All right. And we're back. What did I tell you, folks? What a great interview. Rich is a great guy, and the Buck Around podcast crew. Sounds like they have a lot of fun, and certainly they know their Badger football. We appreciate you tuning in. Hey, if you like the interview, give us a 5-star review, send us a note, leave us questions, say thanks, and give us a Roll Tide. We certainly appreciate it. In the meantime, Roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just to shout out a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out, where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.
Ohio football fans, picture this.
You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
This message comes from our sponsor, Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's TELADOC health/whatsyourwhy.